up in our in Genesis today, and if we happen to get done with it, we'll just kind of sneak on into
Exodus, this fallen story. How's that? I think we have
plenty to talk about, though. We left off in Genesis chapter 47, verse 13. Oh, and we'll be off on vacation next week, so if you'd pray for us and our travels, be appreciative in that. Genesis chapter 47, verse 13 to 28. At this point in our story, you'll recall that great famine had come upon the land, and you remember all the things that happened with Joseph being in Egypt, and Joseph's brothers and father and all of them moving down to Egypt, and as a result of the famine and all of that discussion about Joseph. Did you notice something interesting about the story of Joseph? Did you notice how long it was? I mean, you get in there, you know, Genesis chapter, 38, 39, somewhere in there, all the way up till 47.
That's quite a bit of material, isn't it? I think that
story really deserves a lot of attention. There's really a lot in there. There's more in there than we've talked about, even with some thinking. The story of Joseph, I'm just really glad about. But
here we see
all the family down in Egypt settled into the land of Goshen, and there's a... Am I ringing?
Nope.
Okay, we'll try it. If I keep cutting out, just let me know. I'll turn it off. So with the severe famine, during that time, the Egyptians started running out of food and the ability to pay for it. Specifically, so they went to he's adjusting it a little bit. So as they were running out of the ability to pay for it, Joseph kept telling them, "Hey,
well, you know, give us your livestock,
give us your land." So by the end of the
famine, interestingly enough,
Pharaoh pretty much owned the whole place. They had given up everything they had just to stay alive. And through that giving up their stuff, they also agreed to pay a tax. One-fifth tax, okay? In chapter 47, verse 26. So that one-fifth tax is going to carry on. And interestingly enough, in generations to come, and even in some, as far as today is concerned, sometimes our tax kind of matches up to that standard too. You see what I'm saying? So from that time, Jacob lives 17 more years. And verse 29 through 31...
Somebody read that.
Who'd like to read? Carlene.
As the time of his death drew near, he called for his son Joseph and said to him, "If you are pleased with me, swear most solemnly that you will honor this, my last request. Do not bury me in Egypt. When I am dead, take me out of Egypt and bury me beside my ancestors." So Joseph promised that he would. "Swear that you will do it," Jacob insisted. So Jacob, so Joseph gave his oath, and Jacob bowed in worship as he leaned on his staff.
So Israel wanted to be buried with the rest of his fathers and family, and Rebecca, Sarah. And you know what? by that time, Rebecca was there too, wasn't she?
I think Rebecca was buried under a tree on the way.
On the way, okay. But he did not want to be buried in Egypt. Any particular thoughts about that?
It wasn't home?
That's a thought to me, for sure. Any other thoughts? It wasn't part of the promised land.
That's right.
And I think that was certainly, because you know what? This promise that was given to Abraham was also passed down to Isaac and passed on to Jacob, and it was passed down. That promise meant something. Just like that promise is still meaning something to us today, right? So, he doesn't want to be buried there. And interestingly enough, there's somebody else in a little bit going to say the same thing. And I'm sure they feel that way after 400 years. So, as we get into chapter 48, an interesting thing happens as we see Israel. Let's see. Israel is going to do some blessing here with a neat little twist on it, we might say, okay? Chapter 48, Joseph takes his two sons. Now, you remember Joseph's two sons by the Egyptian lady? What was their names?
Ephraim
and Manasseh. He takes those two sons to Jacob, verse 5, and he's taking them to be blessed by Jacob. Verse 10, it says that Jacob's eyes were weak. His eyes were weak. And I think about, have we heard anything else like that? Anybody else's eyes were weak?
Leah.
Oh yeah, right. But also Isaac in particular. Yeah. There's Isaac, you know, and here comes Jacob in, claiming that he's Esau, right? Because Isaac can't see real well. And here it says that Jacob can't see very well either. But he takes him in. He takes his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, and Manasseh is the older one. And he takes him in to get the blessing of his father upon these children. And he positions Manasseh, which is the older one. Let me make sure that's right. I have to look. Manasseh. Manasseh. He puts Manasseh on his left so that when he walks up to his father, Manasseh is on his right. The right hand of blessing, right? So he's got him before his father. And what does his father do? Are you free to do that? His father does, crosses his hands and blesses him like that. He gives the primary blessing to Manasseh and not Ephraim. Right. It's Ephraim and not Manasseh. Yeah, got that confused. So that's all confusing, isn't it? What do you make out of all that?
There's so many instances in the Bible where the younger will rule the older.
Did Ephraim rule over Manasseh?
I don't see that. He got the choice
of land
that was before he crossed over Jordan. But
he's basically told that he will. I don't know if we ever see it communicated in that way.
Maybe he just got more of the blessing. I mean, Ephraim, the people of Ephraim, are they a larger number of people than Manasseh?
There is a point. I don't have to see the blessing fulfilled to believe it was.
To believe it was fulfilled, right. So, here you see Joseph, and Joseph says, what was he say? Hey, Dad, you got this wrong. You didn't change your hands around the... Nope. No, this is the way it's supposed to be. Now, do you see any corollary to what happened in Jacob's earlier life compared to that?
Yes.
What do you think?
I have said this before, and I will say it again, that I believe that had Jacob not fooled Isaac, God would have prevented Isaac from blessing Esau over Jacob.
Something to think about.
Because Jacob was always said that he was going to be the lead. He didn't have to steal it. God would give it to him.
I think about, you know, I really, when I'm reading this, I think about Isaac. I've got the right person in mind. Isaac. Jacob and Esau. I'm thinking about, right. I'm thinking about, here comes, you know, Jacob, and he said, you know, he's put hair on him. I mean, you know, he went to a big extreme to do that. And what I see is deceit. What other people might see is providence. I don't know. But there he is, and the father's blindness doesn't know the difference. But now you see Jacob. He might not see good, but he knows something.
You know, that almost tells me
he's got some
leading in him that knows what's going on.
Sarah.
And this little note here says during the divided monarchy, Ephraim's descendants were the most powerful tribe in the north. Ephraim was often used to refer to the northern kingdom as a whole.
That's true.
So he was during the divided.
Yeah, that's what you just reminded me of. That's what, you remember that discussion we had here a while back? That we thought it wasn't Ephraim, but it was somebody else. Elamites or, well, I'll talk later. Him and I had a big discussion. I couldn't remember that. What verse is it? Where's that?
Is
that just a note on it?
Just a little note. It says, yeah.
Now I know where to look for the verse I've been looking for 6 months. You ever get an elusive verse like that?
Just a couple of side notes. It's interesting that Joseph actually becomes two nations or two tribes. You know, when even in other references in the Bible, when it's talking about the tribe of Joseph, it's usually in reference to one of his two sons, Manasseh or Ephraim. So he is the only one of the sons that actually becomes two tribes. Is it significant, though? Is there any significance in the fact that Jacob blesses these two boys prior to the blessings to his own sons?
As a matter of fact, he claims Ephraim to be his own son during this.
Both of them, actually.
Both of them?
Both of them.
Ephraim and Manasseh?
Yeah, because it says...
And he tells him, any children you have past this will be yours. But he claims them to be his own.
Verse 5 says that.
Interesting. I'm going to bring this up, and I don't have the answer to it. There's great debate upon this subject, but I'll just spell it out there. What are the 12 tribes of Israel? Are they Jacob's 12 sons, or does one or two sons drop off and Ephraim and Manasseh take its place? And you can do your own study on that, because quite frankly, I don't think I've ever heard a good enough explanation to know. I know that before we finish the study in the next chapter, I know who's going to be named as the 12 tribes of Israel, and that is the original 12 sons. So I just want to bring that up to you so that you can take a look at it. In later lists, there's some good arguments both ways. But fundamentally, the 12 tribes of Israel is represented by the basic 12 sons.
They mentioned the half tribe of Manasseh, all of that.
Manasseh was two tribes that were, or one tribe split in half. One nation was in the northern kingdom, one was on the east side of the Jordan. But if you count actually the 12 tribes, counting Ephraim and Manasseh, there were 13, because Levi was not counted since they were dedicated to God.
But as far as God's intention, it's just the number 12. That's what's repeated in Revelation. That's what's considered a full package. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute in a little bit more depth, and you'll see some of the argumentation as to why.
There must be some significance to the 12, because they're 12 disciples.
The 12 number carries out all the way. And when the 12 disciples got to be minus one, they had to be replaced. It had to come back to 12. So right. Definitely so. But we'll get into some interesting discussion. Did I see a hand? No, I saw you scratching your head. So Israel dies. He's going to die. And he asks his son to take him back and bury him with his fathers, verse 21. Now we're going to get into some interesting stuff. Now we're basically where we just got with our conversation. Chapter 49. You know, how many of you have been around when one of your loved ones died? You know, probably quite a few of us. I was there when my dad died, and I'm sure that a lot of you were around when some significant person in your life passed away. During those last hours, there's no mincing words. Why is that? Because the time is real short, right? And during those last moments, those last hours, it ain't a time to say things you don't mean. As a matter of fact, it's time to kind of forget about what might hurt somebody's feelings. If they need to know something, just deliver it. You know what I'm saying? Don't we do that with each other? Sometimes, you know, you might be afraid to tell me that I got a booger on my nose. You just might be afraid. So you let me go around, you hope somebody else will tell me, and then you figure, hey, you know, someday, somebody's going to tell him he's got a booger on his nose. But, you know, if you're dying and you think it's really important, you might just forget all that stuff and just tell me. Well, here you got Jacob. And you got his sons gathered around, and he kind of tells it like this. And I think, yeah, oh yeah, I think so. And you know, that kind of leads me, I want to tell y'all, interesting, how many of y'all preached a funeral? Some of us, okay. It can be pretty difficult. But during a funeral, you know what you do? You tell about a person's life. You just lay it out there. And you know, sometimes when people die, they're not in the best shape. There was a guy when we were here before that died over in Waterloo or something. They asked me for some reason to do his funeral. I didn't know him from Adam. Here's what his family told me. He's lost as a box of rocks and going to hell in a handbag. Just do whatever you can. That's what that was what they told me. How could you forget that line? I mean, no, but I really didn't talk about him entering God's rest. I mean, you know, I just picked out some good idea out of his life. That coincidentally, please live your life right. It's really hard on the preacher. Okay, now that we're past that. You have Jacob telling his sons how the cow eats the cabbage about each one of them. Solomon?
Yeah, chapter 49, I would like to understand something from 48. If you look at 48 from chapter 10, now Joseph switched the two children. He took the firstborn and put it on his father's right hand, and the second one on his father's right hand.
You know what? That's a good question. You know, there was a switch that happened with Jacob and Esau too. You know, Jacob got the blessing when Esau was really the one in line for it. And the only thing I can tell you, Solomon, is my guess that that was God's providence that that happened. That's the best. I don't know because it really doesn't say. But apparently, Jacob, Israel, really knew what he was doing when he switched his hands. That's the way I take it. So, that's the best I know how to say about it. I give it some more thought, though. Oh, coincidentally, Solomon asked me to tell you that his wife's home from the hospital. So if you're thinking about going and seeing the baby, you'll know that she's not at the hospital. I was supposed to announce that tonight.
Why'd you ask?
A baby boy.
Huh?
Let's see. Azariah? Yeah, Azariah. Yeah. Cute as a bug in a rug. So chapter 49. More discussion, huh? So, it was like 7 a.m. Solomon had just got off work and just got home and 2 days ago. Is that right? 2 days ago. Yeah.
How does shower at the same time?
Chapter 49. Then Jacob summoned his sons and said, "Assemble yourselves that I might tell you what will befall you in the days to come." So there's some prophetic word in this too. "Gather together and hear, O sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel your father." Reuben is first in verse 3. And you remember who his firstborn was? Jacob's firstborn? Reuben. Right. He's going to list them off in order here. So, number one, he says, "Reuben, you're my firstborn son, my might and the beginning of my strength, preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power." Preeminent means points toward the fact that he's excelling, that he's superior type of thing. Verse 4, "uncontrolled as water." Uh-oh, did we just take a turn? "Uncontrolled. You shall not have preeminence. Because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it. He went up to my couch." And if you go back to Genesis chapter 35, verse 22, you see that he went up and slept with his father's wife on his own couch. And here, this man is dying. Instead of, "Son, don't be sad when I'm gone," he says, "Look here, you buzzard." I mean, now I'm doing a little bit of... he's just calling it like it is. "You're not going to be superior. You're not going to excel. You went up and you did this, and you're going to regret it." And you know what? He did.
How?
The father's concubine. Bilhah, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How would you like that to be said? How would you like your father to say that as you went to his dying bed?
Not particularly.
Not, yeah. So then he switches to Simeon and Levi, okay? And he says this. Verse 5, "Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are implements of violence. Let my soul not enter into their council. Let not my glory be united with their assembly, because in their anger they slew men, and in their self-will they lamed oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will disperse them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel." What do you make of that? Do you remember what he's even talking about here? What's he talking about?
The people that were associated with the man that had Dinah.
The men that had raped Dinah. Remember that? Do you remember that story? That's in Genesis 34. And These brothers were mad about that. This says that they're angry about it. You remember what they did to take care of this group of people who had raped their sister? They come to them and say, "Oh, hey, my boy really loves Dinah. We want this to work out." And these boys says, "Hey, I'll tell you how this can work out. You all got to get circumcised." They all got themselves circumcised, and right when they were in the most painful period of recovery, these two guys went into town with their swords and killed all of them.
Not only the men, they killed the women and
the animals and everything.
Wiped the town out and burned it.
And here you have Jacob saying, "Man, I don't want to be in their council. I don't want my glory to be united in their assembly." He says in verse 6, "And in their self will they lamed oxen. Cursed be their anger."
Yes. Is that a great question?
Glenn has the answer. Go ahead, Brett.
Is he talking about consequences of sin or lack of forgiveness? Is there consequences of sin here or lack of forgiveness?
That's a good question. I think certainly I see some consequences of sin. I think certainly I see some consequences of sin. Now, did he have some bitterness toward him? I don't know.
I think how long this has been. A lot of time has passed. What is the thing he remembers about these guys? This is interesting.
Don't you think God is speaking through him, that God wants to straighten this whole record? Reuben, you might be firstborn, but you're not going to be here anymore.
It begins prophetically by saying that I think that it points more toward what God's saying. This is what's going to happen to you.
Absolutely.
Here's what you've done. If that opening line would have been put in there, I would have been left more to ask him about Jacob's own motives. But I've got hands everywhere. I like this.
I don't know if this is correct or not, but it would seem to me it is in a kingly status, which Judah would then become at one point when David finally takes the throne. You think of the line following the firstborn son, and it seems to me, and I could be totally wrong, that Jacob's first three sons are kind of disqualified for things that they had done, which would then fall into the line of the next oldest son, which we're about to get to, in Judah. That's how I see it.
And that's where some of the argumentation comes from about who's actually the 12 tribes. And you see what I'm saying? Because some will say Reuben's disqualified, he's out of here because of what's said here. And you can look at later lists that includes people, and the ones that don't, and do some figuring for yourself.
Why do they call it a blessing?
Huh?
Why do they call it a blessing? Are you sure it's
Have you seen any blessings so far?
No, it sounds more like a curse.
I didn't actually say that.
I've got what?
That he was blessing.
No,
well, if you back up,
In verse 1 of chapter 49, there's nowhere that says that.
You just gather out, but you don't follow you.
Yeah, but you're right, because Ephraim and Manasseh, well, he was blessing them. So by the time you get to the head of chapter 49, he says, well, "This is what's going to befall you." It's not talking about blessing, it's talking about, it's prophetic.
Right.
Glad you said that. I was about to get sideways on my understanding. Go ahead.
Can you read your version again of verse 6?
Let my soul not enter into their council. Let not my glory be united with their assembly.
That sounds to me like he's condemning them to hell.
Well,
Dave,
yes.
In verse 28, what talks about blessings?
In verse 28 of 47?
That's 49.
Yeah, and that kind of comes, that seems to be a separate thing. When I read this, I was reading, here's what's going to befall you, and when he gets past that, then he moves into some kind of blessing, but it doesn't tell you. He says he blessed them according to basically what they had deserved. Yeah. So there's a lot of information to remember here. So, did we get your question? Okay, no, you said you thought that he was condemning them to hell. I can't.
Your version talks about his soul and his glory.
Mine just says,
let me not enter their council, let me not join their assembly.
Yes.
If I remember correctly, the word soul in the Hebrew is the same as life. So you could also say, do not let my life enter into their council.
Do not let me, do not let my soul, do not let my person enter your assembly. That's kind of the way originally that I was looking at it. But I didn't necessarily see it as a condemnation.
I guess I just thought they wouldn't mix anywhere.
I think you can certainly see that in the text. But he's only mentioned three of his sons here. How do you feel about the son so far? Now, who's Levi?
Father of the priesthood.
What? Interesting. Very interesting. Very interesting.
There's no books of the Bible named after Jacob or Ephraim or Reuben, but there is after Levi.
Yep. So I just threw that out there. Why don't you keep that in mind? So then he talks about son Judah. Okay. Now, just before we read this, what do you know about son Judah, tribe Judah? Is there anything significant about Judah? Tamar. Anything else?
David.
David.
Jesus.
Jesus is of the line of Judah, right?
Yep.
So read that as we read this, and keep that in mind, okay?
Even in history, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was the leader in Ethiopia, and he said he was from the line of Judah.
Haile Selassie. Haile Selassie. Calls himself the Lion of the Tribe of Judah.
I'm going to take your wordy for you. Judah, verse 8. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons, who's that? The rest of the brothers, right? Your father's sons shall bow down to you. Judah is a lion's whelp. I looked that up. A lion's cub. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He couches, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion who dares rouse him up. Listen to verse 10. The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh comes. Anybody know what that, you heard that before? Shiloh? Know what that means? Huh? Shiloh? Peace. Till peace comes.
It's Shalom also.
Well, there's a variation of the word, spelled different.
Yep.
Same, yeah. Our teacher down at Sunset always used to say it in the class, Shalom. That's what he was saying, peace. And to him shall be the obedience of the people. He ties his foal to the vine and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washes his garments in wine and his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are dull from wine and his teeth white from milk. Did you pick up on any interesting things as we read through there?
I found that interesting that it says in the beginning that you know, your brothers will bow down to you, and way back in the beginning of all of this, Joseph had the dreams of his brothers bowing down to him. Mm-hmm.
The dream has passed from Joseph.
Right.
And now it's Judah. He says right in the middle of this, verse 10, the scepter will not depart from you. What's a scepter? Is that thing that Dolores has, is that a scepter? That's a, but she'll crown me with it. That's awesome.
Yes. I have notes that says all the kings of the tribes except Saul came from Judah, and Saul was a Benjamite, and all the others came from
Judah. That's it. And the scepter, like a ruling staff, right? The scepter will not depart from Judah. Did the scepter ever depart from Judah?
No.
Is the scepter still in Judah?
Yes.
Who's king?
Jesus Christ.
You're right. Y'all are great. I'll give y'all an A+. Isn't that pretty good though? Here, you know, we're in the book of Genesis, folks, and we're talking about Christ. Isn't that the way it's supposed to be?
You know what's in verse 11?
Verse 11? What's in verse 11? Yep, go ahead.
He's a foal, a donkey's colt. Something like
on the triumphal entry, wasn't there a colt and the?
Yes.
On the triumphal entry, wasn't that an interesting thing? Here comes Jesus into Jerusalem, and they're putting palm leaves and all this stuff down. It must have been on Palm Sunday or
something.
So here they, you know, they're doing all this, and he says to them, let's see, they told him, hey, your disciples are worshiping you or something. He said, and they said, tell them stop.
Yep.
And then he tells them what?
They're silent. The rocks will cry out.
Did you hear that? Do you not love that verse? If I tell my disciples to be quiet, the rocks. I need a title of sermon. The rocks will cry out. Can you imagine if he would have told them to be quiet and you'd had a rock? Here's an old granite boulder stand up and say, yeah, Jesus. Now, can you picture, have y'all watched enough Disney movies to picture this rock flip up? And I would like